Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, Democrats spent a lot of this month rubbing their hands with glee, thinking they were winning the government shutdown. A lot of polls suggest they might be right, but the victory might be short-lived because, of course, the big fight at the time of the government shutdown was about the fate of Obamacare, and the Democrats held a lot of the cards, as we've established a number of times here. But now, of course, there are massive problems with the exchanges, and they're not getting better probably anytime soon, certainly not fast enough for this enrollment to start generating the numbers that the administration needs to determine whether it's going the way they want it to. And so you've already got 10 Democratic senators pushing for an extension in the enrollment period, but the Affordable Care Act specifically states that the enrollment period has to be extended by an act of Congress. The administration can't do it on its own. So, oh my, how the leverage has changed here.
Yeah. Now, the reaction from a lot of folks on Twitter is like, well, you know, Obama's just going to unilaterally do it anyway. So there's two fun questions. But remember, in this one, we sort of have an ally in the insurance companies who largely went along with Obamacare's passage and implementation because they were told, look, you're going to get basically everyone in America is going to be required to purchase your product. Most industries would go along with that sort of thing. The catch is they kept saying, look, we need young, healthy people or else all the old sick people will sign up and we end up with, you know, going bankrupt because we have too many people requiring too much expensive care and not enough people paying premiums to keep the system going. So kind of the crux, the linchpin, as we keep emphasizing, is the individual mandate, which requires young people to go out and buy insurance or pay a fine of 1% of their income this year, 2% next year, and I think 2.5% the year after that. Obviously, the first problem is that people aren't signing up in the numbers they're supposed to. But also, as many Democrats are rapidly realizing, if you're going to have a deadline of March 31st for people to buy insurance, you've got to give them a way to buy that insurance. And obviously, the site has had all kinds of problems. So there's two different deadlines here. The first is the open enrollment period, which I believe was supposed to end March 31st. So the question is that basically the health insurance companies have to keep giving you the opportunity to buy insurance after March 31st. Insurance companies don't like to do that. They don't like having to deal with people changing their plans all throughout the year. So usually they have a specified portion of the year in which you're allowed to make changes to your plans. And that way, if you're expecting if you're expecting a baby, you can add that to your plan. And other changes have been implemented. Democrats, realizing they're in trouble, and are saying, okay, we got to extend the open enrollment period. All that really does is give you the insurance companies have to offer you their plans for a stronger period. It doesn't mean you're still, the deadline to getting it is still there. And that's real kind of the enchilada for Republicans. The fact that they need congressional approval for this, however, then all of a sudden has given House Republicans an enormous amount of leverage to say, look, if you want this kind of change, we have to get some of the stuff that we want too, because you guys passed this thing. We had nothing to do with it. None of our votes went for it. We've been telling you since the beginning this is going to be a disaster. Now you come back and are asking for the exact same thing you refused to give us a few weeks ago. Well, in that interim few weeks, the price has gone up. And if you're Republicans, man, I've already seen one person say, we will delay this enrollment period's deadline as soon as the Keystone Pipeline gets extended. That's one possibility. I think the first opening bid should be repeal the individual mandate. Make them justify that you totally have to extend the time people are allowed to get insurance. However, you still have to keep the penalty for them not having insurance. As bad as things have looked, I think you're really starting to see increasingly deep and serious cracks in the entire foundation of Obamacare. And the fact that 10 Democrats are already saying to the Health and Human Services, we've got to push back this deadline, we've got to push back this deadline, really indicates that the ground is eroding beneath the administration's feet pretty darn quickly.
It certainly seems to be the case, and that's very good news. This is probably the happiest, really good news we've had on Obamacare in a while. Let's just see, A, if the administration honors that part of the law, which is certainly a question mark, as we've established, and exactly how the GOP would go about it if we get to that point. But the bad martini is just the mountain of bad news coming in about what's happening to America's healthcare system. Jim talked a lot in the Morning Jolt today about how even the numbers that have been supposedly enrolled in Obamacare, actually it's not enrolled, it's applied, so it's just under half a million. There's already that number, even higher than that number, who have been told they're not going to have their plan renewed. So there's actually fewer people as of right now that are going to be covered. In addition to that, there's the stories of people that go specifically against what the president promised. You know, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep him or her. Here's the story of Natalie Willis on the CBS Evening News, no less. Props to CBS for covering this and other stories this week. Carter Evans is the reporter, but most of this is the sound bites we've edited together of Natalie Willis explaining her frustrating insurance journey. Carter Evans, the reporter, adds some more bad news at the end.
I was completely happy with the insurance I had before.
What did you find out?
That my insurance was going to be completely different, and they were going to be replaced with 10 new plans that were going to fall under the regulations of the Affordable Care Act. Before, I had a plan that had a $1,500 deductible. I paid $199 a month. The most similar plan that I would have available to me would be $278 a month. My deductible would be $6,500, and all of my care after that point would only be covered 70%. So now I'm being forced to choose from a bunch of new plans that I don't want to choose from that are all more expensive.
New plan prices vary depending on age and location. But Scott, we're told younger people who currently have high deductible plans will likely pay higher premiums, and people with health problems will pay lower premiums.
Isn't that completely backwards?
Greg, the only way that segment could have been any better is if her name was Julia. here's this. This woman is not by no means is a diehard conservative or anything like that. She just she had an insurance plan she liked and she didn't want to lose it. And we on the right have been beating the drum on this because we really I think we have a very strong point that this was kind of the centerpiece of why Obamacare passed and things like Hillary Care and past Democratic efforts didn't. Right? Democrats have wanted either universal health insurance, single payer, or some variation of that for decades now. And the obstacle they keep running into was that most Americans, they felt bad for the uninsured, and they'd, make contributions to charitable hospitals and things like that. But they weren't willing to deal with any changes to their plans in order to help the people who were uninsured. Well, then along comes Obama, and he comes with this, insisting that A, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. B, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Notice, by the way, none of these are getting into the technical aspects of the plan, right? It was all basically look, if you like what you've got, don't worry, nothing's going to change, which obviously we now see is totally, totally false. And Obama had to know that was pretty false. And what's more, back on the campaign trail in 2008, he was saying that not only was everybody going to get to keep everything they wanted, that your premiums were going to go down $2,500. Now, the press should have said these are all contradictory promises. You cannot expand coverage for everyone and make it cheaper simultaneously, right? The money's got to come from somewhere. Somebody's got to end up paying, and at some point there's no magic pot of money that comes along to make up the gap for all this new coverage you're extending. Now, on the one hand, this is wonderful for our messaging purposes. On the other hand, a lot of Americans are going to suffer in the watching this slow motion car or increasingly regular speed or perhaps fast forward train wreck unfolding before our eyes. Just one other point about the numbers that are being thrown around. If Obama had said, let's expand Medicaid, I actually don't think this would have passed quite the way it did, because I think there are a lot of people who would have said, well, that's expanding an entitlement. We don't have any really good way to pay for this. At this point, our entitlement systems, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, are all kind of overstrained. Why would we be making an effort to get more people into them until we have some way to ensure their financial stability? This is one of the reasons that has the states so wary about the Medicaid expansion right now. Well, right now, the Medicaid expansion is the only thing that's working. And listeners can't really tell that I'm making air quotes as I say it, because I have perhaps the non-majority view on the right that Medicaid is a generally good program helping poor people who we should be, in and of itself, Medicaid is not a problem. But you don't necessarily want to expand it, because even though it's a very nice program, it's also a very expensive program. And you can't expand it without putting on huge burdens upon both state governments and the federal government in the not-too-distant future. Well, that's the only thing that's happening so far. People who are buying insurance through the exchanges, the 32 people in South Dakota and the 35 people in some other, Alabama, they're at least paying premiums to keep the system going. People who are on Medicaid, they have a very nominal copay. And as a result of that, they're basically all the money's going out of the system. It's not really going in. And as much as we might want to help these folks, the money's got to come from somewhere. So just keep an eye on that. I think we on the right will be really beating the drum on this and pointing out that in terms of people actually purchasing insurance, the exchanges have been an absolute top-to-bottom catastrophic failure from day one.
On to martini number three now, Jim. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners are aware of that earlier in the week, the Army Chief of Staff, General Ray Odierno, you may remember him from being in charge of the military operations in Iraq, gave a speech and said, basically as a result of sequestration and other military cuts, we have two Army brigades that are combat ready right now. And in speaking to other military officials, the other branches aren't doing much better. And it's because they say everything's pinched by sequestration. Not only is their funding cut, but the rules of sequestration don't allow them to prioritize. So it's just a slice across the board in all these different areas. But apparently, due to orders from the White House, the U.S. Marines are now deciding whether to spend $8 million on new unisex hats for men and women. Apparently, it's a big deal now to have identical uniforms for men and women, at least in the Marine Corps. $8 million tab here, the original hats, which would be cheaper, also look better according to most people. One quoted in the New York Post, called a senior Marine source, says, quote, we don't even have enough funding to buy bullets, and the DOD is pushing to spend $8 million on covers that look like women's hats. And a lot of folks don't even like the style of the new ones. They say they look like bellhops and porters and that sort of thing. So, Jim, once again, fantastic prioritization.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, Greg, and I suspect you won't know the answer to this question, but what was wrong with the old hats?
Nothing, except maybe there's a difference between men and women, and it looks like they just want everything to be the same.
Is there any tactical military advantage from the hats or these stealth hats you can't see? Because actually, my understanding is that they actually do look. They're pretty. I would never say this to a Marine because they probably could kick my butt, but yeah, not the best looking new hats. So you talk about just fiddling with things that don't need to be fiddled with. In fact, there may be no more conservative expression than if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And these would be the quintessential aspect of something. And what's really galling about it is that for it to be going, you know, put effort and money to be going into this area when there really are genuine needs like training and sequester cuts and, you know, bullets and things like that. We always thought were kind of vital and necessary to running a military. And instead, it's like, you know, Anna Wintour and the Gang of Vogue have come to redesign the uniforms or something like that. So way to go, Chuck Hagel. Way to go.
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure they wear helmets when it really matters anyway. So
Well, wait till they redesign those. Kind of a bro helmet. You'll be able to put it on backwards or something like that. Or, you know.
Don't give them ideas. That'll be another $10 million. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a fantastic weekend, and please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.